Welcome to At the Letters. I'm Ben Nicholson-Smith, soon to be joined by Arden Swelling to talk all things Blue Jays, Drew Hutchison, Jason Grilli. We'll talk Jose Bautista and his recent comments as well. And then Rob Bradford of WEEI.com will join us to discuss the Red Sox, Xander Bogaerts, Mookie Betts, tons of young talent over there, and some old talent too. We'll talk a little David Ortiz, all coming up on At the Letters.
1-2 pitch, hit to right field again, base hit, Travis scores, here comes Pilar, another throw, a poor one, cut off, Pilar scores, they've got Barney in a rundown, they tag him, he missed the tag, now Teixeira tags him out around second base to finally end the inning as Darwin comes up with a two-run single to right field, and the Blue Jays soar out in front 4-1 at the end of seven innings.
We are back on At the Letters, and I am joined by Arden Swelling, who sits not to my right, but in the press box at Coca-Cola Field in Buffalo. Arden, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm at a Buffalo Bisons game that kicked off at 10:30 in the morning, which is what you do when it is school day in Buffalo, and there are 12,000 screaming children in the stands. So baseball, a thing that I quite enjoy. 12,000 screaming children, not so much.
Yeah, and mornings too, I would identify as your least favorite time of the day.
Oh, 100%. I'd say that's an accurate scouting report. Yeah. And you know, it's frightening. The children are really running this place. You know, we are well outnumbered, those of us who are above the age of six. I'm a little fearful for my life, not gonna lie.
Okay, well, hopefully everything goes okay there. I want to get to Jason Grilli. I want to get to Jose Bautista, but given that you're in Buffalo and you watched Drew Hutchison turn in another good start for the Bisons last night, let's start with him. What did Hutch look like? I mean, he's someone who is really under the radar, and yet he's having a pretty good season there.
Man, Ben, he was as good last night as maybe as I've ever seen him at any level. I mean, he was just locked in, and you know, from time to time, pitchers will have those outings where you know everything's working, and it's kind of interesting. I was talking to him after the game, and you know, he was saying he didn't really like his bullpen, and he felt like he was kind of yanking the ball, is the way that he described it, in the bullpen. And he kind of came out at the first batter of the night, took him to the warning track in center field, and it's, you know, it's 404 feet out there, and the ball was probably hit about 402, fell into Dale Siciliani's glove out there. And then from then on, I mean, Drew Hutchison was incredible. You know, he had a perfect game going through 5 2/3. You know, the slider was crisp, and he was putting it where he wanted to. He was in the zone, no issues with his command. And he was flipping up these nice little change-ups to right-handers in counts when they weren't expecting them, which is something that, you know, he's been kind of hesitant to go to that change-up, I think, when we've seen him in the majors. And that's something the Blue Jays really want him to do. And he's using it to great effect last night. So, I mean, he looks terrific. But, you know, as we all know, there just isn't a spot for him in the majors right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it seems like that's a fact that's not lost on Hutchison. So tell me if I'm reading too much into the quotes in your story here, which we'll link to in the podcast page. But he seemed very, very concise and almost a little bristly at your questions. Is that how did he seem after the start?
I'd say that's a fair summation of Drew Hutchison's response to my questions. You know, he doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't want to be in Buffalo. I mean, and when you look at it, this is a guy with more than 70 career major league starts. You know, this is a guy who's, you know, been in the majors for, you know, entire seasons before. And, you know, he clearly feels he's, you know, too good to be pitching here. And you know, the opportunity just isn't there in the big leagues. But I think he does feel a little hard done by. And you know, Drew Hutchison is a brusque individual at the best of times, but you know, especially when you know you ask him about something that he doesn't want to talk about, you know, he's not exactly going to let you in and open up to you. It doesn't really matter who you are. So yeah, you know, I think you're right, but you know, that's just kind of the reality of where he's at right now. I mean, it's from the Blue Jays' perspective, it's great to have this kind of sixth man on your starting pitching depth chart. Yeah. Who is pitching this well. I mean, you know, throughout the year in Buffalo, Drew Hutchison has been really, really good. His results have been tremendous. He's striking out more than a batter an inning. I mean, if anything, you know, he's been really unlucky in terms of run support, in terms of some errors behind him, you know, in terms of, you know, relievers coming in and allowing his inherited, you know, runners to score. But, you know, for the Blue Jays, it's a really great thing, but for Drew Hutchison, not so much.
Yeah, and there's no one starter that you'd make the case for removing to put him into the rotation. So right now he's a nice insurance policy, and I guess his next opportunity could be either an injury or when the Blue Jays move Aaron Sanchez to the bullpen, assuming that still happens.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you and I know, I mean, that is the plan for Aaron Sanchez to go to the bullpen at some point and for his workload to be managed. I mean, he's pitching so well right now, it's hard to imagine taking him out. But, that's kind of what Drew Hutchison is waiting on right now. And I think it can be tough for a young player and tough for a guy who felt like he did kind of establish himself as a major league regular. You know, certainly not a dominant major league starter, but a guy who is able to get hitters out in the majors at times. And, it's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, no doubt. What about the rest of the team in Buffalo? Anyone standing out? Dalton Pompey ran into a fence, I believe, recently. And so that obviously is affecting him the last couple of days. But what's standing out to you on the Bison's roster right now?
Well, Jesus Montero just took one over the wall in the opposite field on a first pitch fastball or cutter.
So
he must have known that I was going to be talking to you today. Wanted to put on a show for ATL. So that's always nice to see. He's got he's hitting over 300 here. I mean, that was a 6th home run. I mean, he's hitting the crap out of the ball. Wade LeBlanc, the guy who, you know, everybody's very impressed with. He was just named the Air National League Player of the Month. I think it's 33 consecutive scoreless innings for him now, which is really something else. Is, you know, a kind of a well-traveled guy that, Blue Jays kind of picked up for depth in the offseason. And now, you know, he's really excelling here in Buffalo. And, yeah, you mentioned Dalton Pompey. He's had some injury troubles all year. He came out of spring with a bit of turf toe. And then just trying to beat out an infield hit at first base, he kind of jammed his heel, and it really, you know, swelled up on him and bruised quite a bit. He missed about a week with that. You know, he really hasn't been the same at the plate since then. And then, yeah, 2 nights ago, he just ran into a wall chasing after a ball and had to be helped out of the game, bruised his knee pretty badly. So he's missed 2 games in a row now. It's certainly the last thing Dalton Pompey needs at this stage in his development, is he missing time with injury and to be banged up and having it limiting him at the plate. But I was talking to Tim Raines about him just yesterday. And, you know, a lot of the Blue Jays coordinators have been through Buffalo quite a bit, and Tim Raines especially, who is really, you know, being hands-on with Dalton Pompey as the roving outfield coordinator, and, you know, working with him a lot. And right now, you know, it's kind of the same old story. If here's a guy with every tool you could want. You know, he can hit for contact, for power. He's got an arm. He's got speed, he's got range in the outfield. It's just kind of that, you know, the mental side of this game that kind of wears on him and is the reason why he hasn't been able to stick in the major leagues. And everyone's kind of waiting for him to take that next step mentally to, you know, be able to make the most of his tools.
For sure. And Pompey definitely has tools to spare. But doesn't it say a lot about the depth of the Blue Jays' upper minors when the first two guys you mentioned are Jesus Montero and Wade LeBlanc? I mean, no disrespect to those guys, right? But they're organizational players. They're not exactly top prospects anymore.
Exactly. And if I was to go beyond that, I mean, I would look at, you know, Casey Kochman as another guy who, you know, I've seen take some good swings since I've been down here. Darryl Siciliani, you know, came over from the Mets. I mean, he's looked really good to me in the very limited time that I've seen him, obviously. And Scott Diamond, he's on the mound today pitching before me right now and is absolutely cruising. I mean, these are organizational guys, like you said. You know, there's so much work to put in this offseason in terms of acquiring these guys and kind of fleshing out the upper levels of the minor leagues, which had been left, you know, pretty bereft by Alex Anthopoulos when he left this organization. And, you know, you see these guys up and down the roster. Alexi Casilla, Roberto Hernandez is here. Junior Lake is here. You know, Dom Brown is here. It's, you know, this Buffalo team it's an interesting mix of veteran guys, well-traveled guys. But people around the team will tell you it's one of the better clubhouses that they've had here in a while, just because you have all these, players who kind of understand where they're at in this game.
For sure. Let's talk Blue Jays. We're a Blue Jays podcast after all, so I want to ask you about the big league team, which is suddenly playing very well. They're above 500. They've won 4 series in a row. Is this kind of the beginning of a turnaround for this team, do you think? And it's always so hard to forecast what's going to happen, but what you've seen in the last couple of weeks, does that give you reason to believe that this team's got a run in it?
Well, you know, I think the tide is turning just in the sense that they are, you know, we've seen over this little stretch here where they're exclusively playing New York and Boston. We've seen them win games where they've had to score a lot of runs. We've seen them, you know, win games where they've only scored, you know, three or four runs. You know, we've seen them win a few games where the opposition has scored more than four runs, which is something that, you know, the Blue Jays hadn't done at all this year until they, you know, until they got into this stretch. So I think we all kind of figured that tide would turn at some point. You know, I don't think the Blue Jays are, you know, going to win 8 of 11, you know, for the rest of the season, but it's certainly encouraging what you can see it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that there are reasons to believe, especially on offense, that this team is coming around. You look at guys like Russell Martin, that's got to be pretty encouraging for them. Tulowitzki, of course, on the DL, but when you have guys like Darwin Barney producing offensively the way he is, it's almost not enough to make you forget Troy Tulowitzki, of course, but it sure is a nice stopgap.
Absolutely, and especially when you look at, you know, Josh Donaldson really hasn't been producing the way that, you know, we're accustomed to him producing, you know, of late. You know, Edwin Encarnacion didn't have a terrific May. You know, some of the bigger bats in this lineup are still, you know, scuffling a little bit. So for Darwin Barney to be able to, you know, be a guy that can be counted on, for Ryan Goins the other night, you know, to hit a home run and a double off Ivan Nova. I mean, those are kind of the contributions down in the batting order that we saw a lot last year that really kind of helped the Blue Jays be, you know, the most prolific offense in baseball. You know, those table setters at the bottom of the order were getting it done at times last year and really kind of, you know, being the wind beneath the wings of this offense. And I think we're starting to see that slowly creep back in.
Yeah, definitely. And it can make such a huge, huge difference. Another change that we've seen in the Blue Jays in the last couple weeks is improved bullpen work. And I think Joe Biagini would have to be at the forefront of that. Is it a little easier to believe in this guy as a legit reliever with each passing week for you?
Yeah, and it is, as I kind of talked to, you know, I had a good chat with Pete Walker about it a couple weeks ago, and just about how, you know, when we interact with Joe Biagini, it can be kind of, it'd be hard to take him seriously, frankly, sometimes, just with, you know, the personality and the way that he interacts with us. But, you know, on the mound, he really is a different guy, and he really does lock in and zone in, and you know, he is very, very focused on the task at hand. You know, Pete Walker says he's as focused as, you know, any guy that he's seen. And, you know, I want, have you noticed that when he gets on the mound, I mean, there is very much a different mentality there.
Yeah, no, there is for sure. And I think what the Blue Jays need is a few more guys in that same mold. And that is part of the reason that led them to Jason Grilley. And Grilley is going to be one of those guys who presumably fits in the middle innings for this team going forward. You're certainly not going to start off a guy with a 5.29 ERA as your primary setup man. Is that how you see Grilley fitting onto this team?
I mean, I think that anybody in the Blue Jays bullpen right now, if they can show John Gibbons and Pete Walker that they can be relied upon, they can find themselves in that eighth inning pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, because with Drew Storen, you know, struggling the way he has throughout the season, Brett Cecil on the GL, with, you know, Gavin Floyd struggling recently and being used an awful lot recently, Jesse Chavez having some, you know, some issues of late, I think if Jason Grilley can step in and show that, hey, I can get you three outs, he can find himself in some very big spots very soon. I think when you look at some of the peripherals this year, it's not super encouraging. You know, you don't like, you know, how much he's walking guys, but it does seem like the swing and miss is still there. So if they can bring him in the zone, and if he still has something to offer at 39, I think he could very quickly become a setup man on this team.
Yep, he could. And yet, he'd have to cut down on his walk rate to do that. 13 walks in 17 innings. He was a lot more effective last year, a lot more effective in 2013, certainly when he was an all-star. So you can point to the track record here. I guess it's just a question of whether he can actually put it together and throw strikes, because you know that he does have a fastball that can generate swings and misses.
Absolutely, and it's kind of, you know, it's a you know, no-lose scenario, really, for the Toronto Blue Jays when you look at the fact that they're paying him the minimum. They're going to have to cover his buyout next year, which is like $250,000. You know, it really is a free look at a guy who, you know, as you alluded to, had a lot of success pretty recently in his career. You know, this year is, you know, he had that Achilles thing that he was kind of getting over, and, you know, I heard Ross Atkins yesterday kind of allude to maybe he came back too soon from that and he wasn't really ready to contribute. But, you know, I also kind of, you know, I read yesterday that Russ Martin was saying, you know, this guy is a gamer. This is exactly the kind of guy that we need in our bullpen. For Russ Martin to say that, I think that's saying a lot.
Yep, It's true. It's going to be fun to see if he has anything left. And if he doesn't, I'm sure they'll cut bait. Also, I'm guessing that this will not be the first time or the last time that the Blue Jays acquire a reliever this season. Something tells me they're going to be talking pitching for the next couple months as well.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm sure you'd agree with this, that I don't think they're going to feel especially beholden to him. You know, if he comes out of the gate and struggles, I don't think the Blue Jays will hesitate to cut bait on him. Really, when you look at how this deal is structured, it really is just a free look.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. One thing that will not be free is the services of one Jose Bautista, who is months away now from free agency and had some interesting comments in an article by Tom Verducci at Sports Illustrated. What did you make of that article, Arden? I think that when you see Bautista saying things like he would be stupid to leave Toronto, it definitely catches your eye.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And I think, you know, we've come to know Jose Bautista, you know, over our time covering him. And I wasn't surprised by anything that he said. You know, that's Jose, and that's the kind of guy that he is. He's very opinionated. He'll tell you the truth, and, you know, he'll be very upfront. And frankly, most of the time he's right about the things that he says. And a lot of time it makes a lot of sense to me. You know, a lot of the opinions that he holds about baseball and about where the game's going, about his own place in the game. I mean, it's hard to find a guy who really understands his true value as a player and just how much, you know, revenue is generated basically off of his shoulders and off of his performance and off of the moments that he generates on the field. He really does understand that, and it's such an interesting, unique situation in Toronto where, you know, Jose Bautista is going to be on the level of excellence someday. You know, as he alludes to in the article, you know, he's up there with Joe Carter, with Robbie Alomar, Carlos Delgado. I mean, he's in that pantheon of great Blue Jays, and whether he gets to finish his career here or not, I mean, it seems like a win-win for both sides, but, you know, it can be hard to line up on dollars and cents. Especially when, you know, the fallout of this contract could be precedent-setting for other players in the game.
Yeah, and I think that you raise an interesting point there, and it comes right at the very end of the article where Bautista makes mention of the fact, and he does so in a humble way, but he says, hey, I'm up there in the offensive categories in this franchise's history. So, in a sense, his value, which is really central to the discussion we're having here, but his value is greater to the Blue Jays than it would be to the Cincinnati Reds, for example.
Absolutely. The Blue Jays will, you know, if he finishes his career at the Toronto Blue Jays will make money off of him for, you know, the rest of his life, really, right? You know, you think about how many bobblehead days they can do, or how, you know, when they put his name up a level of excellence, and, you know, they can give away t-shirts and jerseys, they can have him making appearances, you know, they could turn him into kind of, you know, an ambassador for the franchise, much like, you know, what you see Robbie Alomar do. You know, Robbie Alomar very involved in, you know, the Tournament 12 and, you know, the camps and the Jays care and all that stuff. I mean, Jose Bautista would fit perfectly into that mold. And, you know, I think Jose Bautista probably himself, and he hasn't told me this personally, but just from talking to him and the way that he views the game, I could see him, you know, having designs on being an executive someday or a member of a front office in some capacity. There is future value to this with Jose Bautista remaining a member of this franchise beyond just what he can contribute, you know, on the field between now and the end of his playing career.
Yeah, and yet, as much as the comments are really interesting and it's an interesting topic of discussion, it doesn't really change my expectation for how the next 4 or 5 months are going to play out, and maybe longer, because I could see Bautista's free agency lasting more than just a few weeks when he does hit free agency. Does this fundamentally change anything about the way you view the next few months for Bautista and the Blue Jays?
No, not at all. You know, and when it's interesting to talk about, you know, Alomar and you know, the way that he's remembered as a Toronto Blue Jay. You know, he spent 5 years with this organization. He spent the bulk of his career with other teams. And, you know, sure, so, you know, it was five of his best years, but he still spent the bulk of his playing days with other teams. And he remains, you know, an ambassador for the organization. You know, when he went to Cooperstown, he's wearing a Blue Jays hat. You know, he is a Toronto Blue Jays. So I don't see, you know, if the Blue Jays decide to re-sign Jose Bautista for, you know, what it would take to re-sign him, if they decide that's not worth it for them going forward with where the franchise is and, you know, whether they think they're going to contend in the next few years. I mean, I don't see any reason why, you know, Jose couldn't still, after his playing days are done, you know, be a member of the Toronto Blue Jays in some capacity in a front office role. So, you know, I don't necessarily think he has to finish his career playing here to accomplish these, you know, things that I think are goals of his. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it definitely will be. You know, you look broadly, and more often than not, free agents go where the money is. So we'll see if that money's here in Toronto. Arden, thanks so much for joining us from Buffalo. Hopefully the rest of the game unfolds with relatively few incidents for you, the Bisons, and all the fans in the stands there.
Well, I am protected in the press box here, so I feel relatively safe. I have high ground, so I can fend off the children if I need to. Scott Diamond continues to cruise. He's through six innings here. He's looked great. He's gotten plenty of ground balls. And Jesus Montero continues to be the only person who has driven in a run here today, sending a clear and direct middle finger right at you, Ben.
Okay, I'll do my best not to take it personally. Enjoy the rest of the game.
Thanks, bud.
Okay, thanks.
This ball is hit in the air, deep to right field, going back is Rickard. He looks up, it's gone, a home run! The third home run of the game for Mookie Betts. And it is 6-2 Red Sox. Boy, how do you like Mookie? Three home runs tonight. One to center, one to left, one to right.
We are back on At the Letters and happy to be joined by Rob Bradford, who you can read on WEEI.com, here on WEEI, and follow on Twitter at Bradfo. Rob, how's it going? Thanks for making the time.
Oh, I am so good. I'm in Baltimore right now, and Baltimore is, someone asked me where would I rank it in terms of visiting cities, and I would have to put it top five, but still behind Toronto. So,
wow.
You know, Toronto holds a dear place in my heart ever since I stayed on a boat in the back of the Rogers Center.
On a boat one time here?
Yeah. So basically, I used to come up. Well, I still come up there, but the Toronto Board of Tourism always used to put us up because we had a deal with them. And one time I was coming up, and they would always find a different place. I said, the only place we can find is the Boatel. And I'm like, the Boatel. I'm like, okay. And it's a bed and breakfast on a boat. And right almost, you can almost see it if you look out the back of Rogers Center. And so I covered an entire series, Why Sleeping on a Boat, in the back of Rogers Center.
Wow. And you haven't been back. You haven't requested that every time since?
No, you know, here's the thing. In theory, it seems like a good idea. And I would recommend anybody to go to the Boatel. They're very nice people. But, you know, when you're working, a bed and breakfast doesn't really work that well because they're like, hey, stay for the pumpkin pancakes. I'm like, no, I got to go write some stories. It doesn't really work that way.
Right.
So, yeah, no, I'm going to leave the Boatel for other people.
Right. Those who have time to eat pumpkin pancakes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, as well as I do, when you're yeah. in the middle of baseball season, you just can't eat pumpkin pancakes.
Yeah. Words to live by, for sure. I wanted to start by asking you about Mookie Betts. I mean, watching the highlights from last night's Red Sox game, it's pretty impressive what this guy is doing. Not only the diving catch in right center field, but three home runs. Is this guy actually a power hitter?
Yeah, he is. And if you watch him swing, he has such a, I don't want to say a violent swing, but he has a swing where sometimes when he's going bad, he's a guy that he's trying to hit home runs, or it looks like he's trying to hit a home runs all the time. And he really, because of his hands are just so, so strong, and because of the torque in his swing, and I told Mookie this before, if you're teaching a kid about leading hips first on a swing, I mean, he is the be-all, end-all of how you get your power from the middle of your body, even before you swing your hands through. So all of that factored in, you'll see like that he's a guy who can hit a ball 500 feet seemingly. But last night you look at it and he hit the ball to all fields. And I thought Xander Bogaerts was interesting after the game because Xander says he's one of the few guys who, when he gets up, I actually expect that he's going to hit a home run. Now, you know, I can understand that with David Ortiz or some of these other people, but you know, Mookie Betts, as to your point, 5'9", you know, 180 something pounds. You're saying that he's going to hit a home run every time up. It really is a unique player. But to go back to your original point, I do think that he is a legitimate 25 home run threat.
Wow, that's pretty crazy, especially when you pair it with the rest of the Red Sox lineup, best in baseball. And another big reason for that production would be Xander Bogaerts. You look right now at the leaderboards in the American League, and whether it's batting average, wins above replacement, Bogaerts is really high up in a lot of different categories. Is he someone who we're going to be talking about as an MVP candidate this year?
Yeah, I think that you have to start. And the only thing that's going to be a drawback for him is I don't know if he's going to hit with the sort of power that you say an MVP candidate usually possesses.
Right.
He might end up between 10 and 15 home runs. But you can't ignore what type of player this guy is. Defensively, he's become one of the better shortstops. Since the beginning of 2015, he has more hits than anybody in baseball. He's a legit guy. And it's funny because one of the debates that it's a really fun debate for Red Sox fans right now is which guy should you prioritize, Mookie or Xander? And it is amazing. I mean, both these guys are 23 years old. It's nuts. And so with Xander Bogaerts, and I wrote about this the other day, you know, I look at Xander is that this isn't part of a chip that you trade to get Mike Trout. This is Mike Trout. And I'm not saying that he is at the absolute level of Mike Trout and Bryce Harper quite yet, because once again, he doesn't have their sort of power.
Yeah.
But he is that sort of an elite player in baseball. I go under the how can you find these players in baseball? And there just aren't a lot of Xander Bogaerts in baseball, and he is just such an elite, unique player. And that's why I sort of put him in that classification.
Yeah, it's not crazy. I mean, premium position, 350 average. He's in the same ballpark as Trout when it comes to wins above replacement. So it's pretty amazing. And yet, his production pales in comparison to that of Jackie Bradley Jr., at least so far this year. And it just keeps on going for the Red Sox. So, I mean, so far we know. We've seen what Bradley Jr. has done. It's impressive. But what I'm wondering is, do the Red Sox, Dombrowski, Mike Hazen, John Farrell, do they expect something like this to continue from Bradley, or is regression coming for this guy?
Well, it's hard. That's a good question, Ben. I mean, it's hard to tell because we talk about Xander and you say, you know what you have in Xander. You just know. It's by now, after 1.5 seasons, he has more hits than anybody in baseball. Well, okay, so Jackie's a little bit different because he first came up in 2013. 2014, just awful. Just terrible. He came up too early, first of all, in 13. 2014, just awful. Gets to 2015, still sort of has that stigma in the organization, not really listening to coaches, maybe digging himself too big a hole. Then has a good spring training, starts in the year in the minors, does really well. Again, pulling himself out of it, then finally gets his big chance in August and just tears it up. Tears it up for a month, but here's the thing. In September of last year, he was terrible again. People forget that. So now he starts off this year really, really good. I think that he has figured this out, that he has made adjustments, that he is going to be very, very good going forward. But I don't know if you can say this is the player absolutely that you're going to have, the guy that you've seen over the last month. I don't know if you can say that because he's shown a streakiness even as early as last September. But I think that really what you have, if I had to guess, Ben, if I had to guess about Jackie Bradley, I think that you're talking about a guy who's going to hit 280, you know, with, you know, over 20 home runs and with obviously some of the best defense, if not the best defense in all baseball in center field.
And that sounds like an all-star player.
Yeah. You know, he is, you know, and that's the thing is that he is an all-star player. Sure, right now he's an all-star player, right?
He has to.
I feel like I'm discrediting him by saying there's a chance that he might come back here, but there hasn't been that. Like Xander, it's been a year and a half of extended production. Jackie, it's been, you know, a month and a half of extended production because he still has last September. And it's funny because I was talking to Travis Shaw last night about this. Did you guys expect this to happen? So you have all these guys we're talking about, and then you have the Shaws and Swihearts and a lot of younger players. And they said, yeah, because we did it at the end of last year. And a lot of people said, well, don't, you can't say that because that those games didn't count. Torrey Lovello was the manager. It was sort of an aberration. You know, it was just they were playing loosey-goosey. But I think Shaw's on to something. Is it, yes, this was what we saw last year. And guess what? You're a season later, and now you're going to be able to sustain it because you're a season wiser and you're better. So I do think that overall that this is sort of what you should predict for the Red Sox.
Yeah. And as a group, it's been pretty impressive to watch so far. First place in the East, best offense in baseball. What's it been like watching this team, being around this team this year? Because seemingly every different season, the Red Sox take on a bit of a different character.
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, when we, because we stemmed everything, we had everything off of 2013, or even going back before that, 2011, they have the quote-unquote best team ever up until the historic collapse in September. And you had a lot of veterans. You went out and got Adrian Gonzalez, and you had the pitchers who had been around a while. That's just sort of the star-studded team that collapsed. And obviously 2012 was Bobby Valentine's disaster. But 2013 was the sort of, this is how you do it. You get the gritty, gutty veterans who are on short-term contracts, and you have the good enough pitching, and then you go from there. But then, you know, they went away from that. In 2014, they got in the A.J. Prezinskis, and they said, we'll figure it out. Well, they didn't figure it out. And then you get to 2015, and here's the thing with this team, is that everyone talks about, you know, Price and Kimbrel and how they changed. To me, the biggest change in this team is a simple fact is that these guys who you're leaning on at this time last year are a year older. That's it.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, you had Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts and these guys, and they are now better players because they're a year older. So, you know, I think that you ask, like, what is it like to watch this team? This isn't like 2013. This is a completely different dynamic, a completely different way of winning. And it's really the way that they said was coming, but we didn't really believe it because when you finish last 2 years in a row, like, how can you believe anything they say?
Yeah.
But this is it. And I don't know if you feel this way, Ben, but also one thing that I think has gone under the radar is John Henry had a proclamation a couple of years ago. Hey, baseball's getting younger and younger. We have to figure this out because baseball's getting younger and younger. The travel's tougher. The season's longer. That you get these older players and you're going to break down more. And then you look at this Red Sox team and you look at, oh, can they sustain that? Well, you feel a lot better about it because these guys are younger. And I know that I was feeling a lot better about myself waking up early and playing a game of baseball at 23 than I would have been at 33.
Oh, yeah. You had time for those pumpkin pancakes. You could do it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to say that they were the freshly laced pumpkin pancakes. But it is baffling. I mean, listen, I mean, let's be honest, though, Ben. It's sort of an aberration because teams usually just don't get. You can say the game's getting younger, but you just usually don't get the opportunity to have a bunch of 23 to 25-year-olds being able to carry your team. But, by the way, while you have the meat and potatoes in the order, the 40-year-old who is having the best year of his career, you know, it's sort of an aberration that we're watching.
Yeah, maybe the Cubs have that, and there aren't a lot of other teams in baseball that do. So I think there's a lot of reasons to like where the Red Sox are at right now. But one guy that no one would describe as young is David Ortiz. Do you believe that he's going to retire at the end of this year, or is there any doubt that he might play another year after 2016?
Nah, he's retiring.
He's retiring.
It's a great conversation. It's a great conversation, but here's the thing. If you watch him walk around, you say, you know, you get it. I mean, this his heels, his Achilles, like most recently he fouled a ball off of his foot. You see him running around, and we're in June now. But we're early in the season.
Yeah.
This is takes a lot for David Ortiz to manage that situation with the Achilles and the foot. And you know, he's learned how to manage it, whether both in terms of preparing for games, in terms of being economical, even when running down to first base. But I mean, this is the thing. Like he says, there's a lot of reasons, and I do believe there's a lot of reasons. I know 3 years ago he promised his son he'd be retiring now, so forth and so on. But to me, the biggest thing is that he gets it. I mean, this is not easy keeping this heel and Achilles thing together. And you know, we really, honestly, I mean, they're gonna have to knock on some wood that this isn't gonna be a problem going forward, because obviously he's such a huge part of his lineup.
Yeah, no, definitely, and has been for a long time. When you look ahead a couple of months, and now we're in June, so I feel like we're allowed to talk trade deadline at this point. Not that it necessarily.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that stopped me before anyway. But
I'm talking trade deadline on April 15th.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so with the Red Sox, the obvious thought is that they're going to be in the market for pitching, whether it's relief pitching or starting pitching. Is that conventional wisdom accurate in this case?
Yes, I think it is. The only avenue that they could go in terms of acquiring a different bat is maybe in left field. Right now, what you're doing is you're platooning. And right now it's Blake Swihart, the Colt, who has a concussion. I don't think they're going to do that. But what I think what they have to prioritize is money, because so many people just default to pitching, starting pitching, starting pitching. Well, now Rodriguez is back. You actually have Clay in the bullpen, which this is, as much as people in Boston are having a problem with him right now, that's not a, you have a, other than that, you have guys who seemingly are pretty good. Now you can always upgrade, but tell me, Ben, I mean, Rich Hill, Rich Hill would be great to acquire, but do you want to give up what you're going to have to get, or take what it would take to get Rich Hill when you already have these guys sitting there? I think what they should prioritize, no doubt about it, and you saw this in Toronto, is another eighth inning guy.
Yeah.
I think this is absolutely what they need. Carson Smith going down for the year was a huge hit for them, not because Koji Uehara can't pitch anymore, but because you can't lean on Koji like you have been in the past. You can't do that. And if you do, you're going to have trouble. I mean, he's another 41-year-old who is, he's good. We get it. But the idea was that Carson Smith could come in and take some of that heat off of it. And I think you've already seen that a little bit. The Koji has been up and down. He hasn't been the lockdown Koji that we've come to know. So I do think that getting that other late inning reliever is important. But to Ben, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're talking trade deadline, obviously getting a starting pitching is difficult, but getting that eighth or ninth inning guy is maybe the most risky of any of the positions you can get. You're overpaying, and a lot of times you're getting Gagne.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. And I think that you look around baseball right now, and if you're trying to acquire either one of those things, it's going to be tough unless some sellers emerge out of nowhere. I mean, we've seen it the last few years where the second wild card really creates a different dynamic. A lot of teams think they're in it. So maybe you ask the A's about Rich Hill. Maybe you're asking them about Sean Doolittle or trying to put something together for both. But really, for a team that got Rich Hill for essentially nothing last year, I would be surprised if they're willing to give up top prospects 12 months later when he's a year older.
Yeah, well, and also it's you do have some things here. It's like you don't, if you have a Clay Buchholz, and I know that Clay Buchholz has had a bad year, but Clay Buchholz has proven in the major leagues that he can go on some runs, and that he might be not a bad option if something else falls through. And in terms of Rich Hill, the thing is, Rich Hill, first of all, I'm a huge fan of Rich Hill. I saw him go on the run last year, and great guy, and it's a great story, and I think he can help a team. But you're right. I don't think if you're the Red Sox, you give up what the A's probably be asking. But I tell you what, if I'm the Orioles, I do. I absolutely do. I think that Rich Hill, this is exactly what a team like the Orioles would need. And so that's the interest. It's to think that Rich Hill is going to be the swing piece in the American League East race is mind-boggling.
Yeah, Yeah, it's true, but it could happen. The Jays could use some pitching too this summer. And that's the last thing I wanted to ask you about before letting you go is the Blue Jays. You've seen them up close for years. We saw them. You saw them last weekend. You'll be seeing them in Boston this weekend. What do you make of this 2016 Blue Jays team?
Here's the thing. Here's a narrative that's going all through Boston that we're talking about. Oh, the Red Sox are real, and what can we expect? I must have said on the pregame show three times over the last week, yes, the Orioles, I think, can be in it for the long haul. I like their bullpen, and, I like their lineup, and they get another pitcher. But the Blue Jays are the team that's going to make a run. I mean, I think that everyone is starting to think that. You look at the top of that rotation, the one and the two, and the Stroman and Sanchez, and then you look at the lineup, obviously. And if they could just, we talk about the Red Sox, you could just fix what's leading up to the end of their bullpen. But I just look at that team, and I don't know if you have a different vibe there, but I just look at that team. I think this is the sort of team that is going to make a run. They're feeling a little bit better about themselves. If they fix a little thing here, they fix a little thing there. But they have the main pieces, the pieces that are hardest to get. I think it's going to be a great, great race, and it might just come down to, listen, I know the Red Sox are beating up on the Orioles as we speak a little bit, but I think it's going to be a fun, fun summer with these three teams.
Yeah, for sure, and I think in particular Red Sox and Jays. Red Sox, I think at this point, have got to be the favorite, but the Jays will be in there. Rob, thanks so much. We'll be following you on WEEI.com and on Twitter at Bradfo. Really appreciate the time today.
All right. Absolutely. Great job. I appreciate it. Anytime you need me, I'm there for you.
That does it for this week on At the Letters. Thanks to Arden Zwelling at Arden Zwelling on Twitter. Thanks to Rob Bradford at Bradfo on Twitter for all his insight on the Boston Red Sox. Thanks to producer Sam McKee. And also this week, a special shout out to Bob Elliott, who is retiring after a Hall of Fame baseball career. Bob has done such a great job promoting baseball, writing about baseball, covering it from all angles for the Toronto Sun. And he really is a friend to everyone in the Canadian baseball community, myself included. So a congratulations and thanks to Bob for all of his coverage of Canadian baseball. That's it for this week on At the Letters. I'm Ben Nicholson-Smith. Thanks for listening.
Well, before we get started, Jay, I guess the news about Bob Elliott. Bob retiring. Is Bob in here? Is that right? Is it out there yet? I sure as hell hope so. It's not? Well, first off, hey, Bob's a friend to everybody in this room and the people out there that aren't here. And, it's a big loss for baseball. He's been a great writer for many, many years. He's done a lot for the sport, and he's a friend to everybody, and so everybody's going to miss him. Hopefully hangs around a while. So, love Bobby.